This is the Cambridge Assessment International Education, Cambridge IGCSE, November 2023 examination in English as a Second Language. Paper 3. Listening. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers. And when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the exam. Exercise 1. You will hear 4 short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than 3 words or a number for each answer. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. What will the friends drink to keep cool? B. What does the boy put in the freezer?
It's so hot today.
I know. Let's have something to drink. Have you heard what they say about drinking hot drinks in summer?
What, like tea and coffee?
Yeah. Apparently it cools you down because it makes you sweat. I don't feel like one right now, though. How about some orange juice? It's been in the fridge, so it'll be lovely and cold.
Perfect. I'll get it. I'll see if we've got some ice to put in it. Oh, what's this in the freezer? Is it your pillow?
Oh, that's a bed sheet. It's to keep me cool as I go to sleep. It works.
It's so hot today.
I know. Let's have something to drink. Have you heard what they say about drinking hot drinks in summer?
What, like tea and coffee?
Yeah. Apparently it cools you down because it makes you sweat. I don't feel like one right now, though. How about some orange juice? It's been in the fridge, so it'll be lovely and cold.
Perfect. I'll get it. I'll see if we've got some ice to put in it. Oh, what's this in the freezer? Is it your pillow?
Oh, that's a bed sheet. It's to keep me cool as I go to sleep. It works.
Question 2. A. Where will the friends go together? B. What time does the woman need to be at home by?
Shall we go for a walk?
Actually, I need to pick up a few things for dinner. Do you mind if we go to the market instead?
Not at all. I'll have a look around while you do your shopping. There's loads to see and I need to buy a gift. I might go to the bookstall there. It opens again after lunch.
Sure, sounds like a plan.
What time is it now? 1:15. I'll need to watch the time, actually. There are no buses after 4:30 and I can't get home later than 4:45 this afternoon.
No problem.
Shall we go for a walk?
Actually, I need to pick up a few things for dinner. Do you mind if we go to the market instead?
Not at all. I'll have a look around while you do your shopping. There's loads to see and I need to buy a gift. I might go to the bookstall there. It opens again after lunch.
Sure, sounds like a plan.
What time is it now? 1:15. I'll need to watch the time, actually. There are no buses after 4:30 and I can't get home later than 4:45 this afternoon.
No problem.
Question 3. A. What do the horses help support in the national park? B. What did wild horses carry in the past to help people with their work?
Did you have a nice holiday?
Yeah, we went to this national park called Dartmoor
It's beautiful, and there are these famous wild horses there. It doesn't look like there are many plants for them to eat, but they survive just fine. And by eating the grass there, they actually provide benefit to other wildlife. They're cute, too. Anyway, in the 19th century, they were used as working horses because they have such a calm nature. Local families used them when they went to town to shop, and the horses also helped farmers gather their sheep. Sometimes postal workers even got them to transport mail.
Interesting. Did you have a nice holiday?
Yeah, we went to this national park called Dartmoor. It's beautiful, and there are these famous wild horses there. It doesn't look like there are many plants for them to eat, but they survive just fine. And by eating the grass there, they actually provide benefit to other wildlife. They're cute, too. Anyway, in the 19th century, they were used as working horses because they have such a calm nature. Local families used them when they went to town to shop, and the horses also helped farmers gather their sheep. Sometimes postal workers even got them to transport mail.
Interesting.
Question 4. A. In what year was the island fully formed? B. Who is allowed to visit the island?
On today's Nature programme, we're going to talk about a small island in the North Atlantic Ocean, which suddenly appeared after an enormous volcano erupted in 1963. However, the island wasn't actually complete until 1967, when the volcano finally stopped being active. It's one of the newest islands in the world, but it's closed to the public. Scientists, who do have access to the island, are trying to find out how ecosystems develop when there are no humans around. There are already loads of species that have made the island their home, like seabirds and seals and certain kinds of plants too, but sadly, tourists can't see them. On today's Nature programme, we're going to talk about a small island in the North Atlantic Ocean, which suddenly appeared after an enormous volcano erupted in 1963. However, the island wasn't actually complete until 1967, when the volcano finally stopped being active. It's one of the newest islands in the world, but it's closed to the public. Scientists, who do have access to the island, are trying to find out how ecosystems develop when there are no humans around. There are already loads of species that have made the island their home, like seabirds and seals and certain kinds of plants too, but sadly, tourists can't see them.
That is the end of the 4 short recordings. In a moment, you will hear exercise 2. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 2. You will hear a man called Ben talking about making and flying a kite. Listen to the talk and complete the details below. Write 1 or 2 words or a number in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Hi everyone, I'm Ben, here to tell you about my experience of making and flying a kite. I'd always thought it was an activity for children, really. I can remember making a kite for a homework project at school. Then, as a teenager, I made another one for a science experiment. However, this time, I was keen to have another go, as I was considering writing a story about kites as part of my work as an author. I knew it'd be an interesting topic. And I thought if the kite turned out okay, I might even enter it in a competition one day. Anyway, I started collecting the materials I needed. I read that plastic bags would be good for the body of the kite if I had nothing else. I didn't think they'd look great, but they did. And I discovered later that some people even use newspapers. I also managed to get some wooden sticks for the frame, though they weren't exactly what I wanted. and the coloured paper I added for the tail looked a bit silly, but it didn't matter. When I started making the kite, I hadn't really decided what shape it should be. Traditionally, most kites seemed to be a diamond shape, but somehow I ended up with an oval. It looked all right, though, and more interesting than the square ones I saw in the shops. The final task was to add a picture to the kite. I found one of a shark, carefully copied it onto paper, and stuck it onto the kite. It was certainly easier to draw than the tiger I'd seen, although I wished afterwards I'd gone for a dragon, as I later saw one on a kite and it looked fantastic. But never mind. Then I had to decide where to fly the kite. My brother was keen to come with me and proposed going to a local beach. There's always a really strong wind blowing there, though, and the park is usually crowded, so instead we drove to a field just a few miles from where I live. That had the space we needed. Incredibly, we got the kite up into the sky quite quickly, even though we were beginners. There was an old house nearby with a tree in the garden, but we managed to avoid the kite crashing into it. Then the kite started heading straight for a chimney on the house where it almost got caught. Luckily, we pulled on the string just in time and the kite rose above the wall, around the house and into the air again. Anyway, I had no idea what to expect when we'd gone out to try the kite. I thought I might end up feeling annoyed because we'd be unable to fly it, but actually that wasn't the case and I was thrilled at what we'd achieved. In fact, driving back, my brother and I stopped to celebrate. We bought some pizza and had it in the car instead of the ice cream we had been considering, as we were quite cold by then, and also got some strawberries to have when we arrived home. It was a great day.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Hi everyone, I'm Ben, here to tell you about my experience of making and flying a kite. I'd always thought it was an activity for children, really. I can remember making a kite for a homework project at school. Then, as a teenager, I made another one for a science experiment. However, this time I was keen to have another go as I was considering writing a story about kites as part of my work as an author. I knew it'd be an interesting topic. And I thought if the kite turned out okay, I might even enter it in a competition one day. Anyway, I started collecting the materials I needed. I read that plastic bags would be good for the body of the kite if I had nothing else. I didn't think they'd look great, but they did. And I discovered later that some people even use newspapers. I also managed to get some wooden sticks for the frame, though they weren't exactly what I wanted. And the coloured paper I added for the tail looked a bit silly, but it didn't matter. When I started making the kite, I hadn't really decided what shape it should be. Traditionally, most kites seemed to be a diamond shape, but somehow I ended up with an oval. It looked all right, though, and more interesting than the square ones I saw in the shops. The final task was to add a picture to the kite. I found one of a shark, carefully copied it onto paper, and stuck it onto the kite. It was certainly easier to draw than the tiger I'd seen, although I wished afterwards I'd gone for a dragon, as I later saw one on a kite and it looked fantastic. But never mind. Then I had to decide where to fly the kite. My brother was keen to come with me and proposed going to a local beach. There's always a really strong wind blowing there, though, and the park is usually crowded, so instead we drove to a field just a few miles from where I live. That had the space we needed. Incredibly, we got the kite up into the sky quite quickly, even though we were beginners. There was an old house nearby with a tree in the garden, but we managed to avoid the kite crashing into it. Then the kite started heading straight for a chimney on the house where it almost got caught. Luckily, we pulled on the string just in time and the kite rose above the wall, around the house and into the air again. Anyway, I had no idea what to expect when we'd gone out to try the kite. I thought I might end up feeling annoyed because we'd be unable to fly it, but actually that wasn't the case and I was thrilled at what we'd achieved. In fact, driving back, my brother and I stopped to celebrate. We bought some pizza and had it in the car instead of the ice cream we had been considering, as we were quite cold by then, and also got some strawberries to have when we arrived home. It was a great day.
That is the end of the talk. In a moment, you will hear exercise 3. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 3. You will hear 6 people talking about what makes a good holiday. For each of the speakers 1 to 6, choose from the list, A to G, which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the appropriate box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. You will hear the recordings twice. Speaker 1.
Recently, I spotted a great package deal online and decided to go for it at the last minute with a close friend who happened to be free. This involved rushed, last-minute preparations, and when we arrived on holiday, work was still on my mind. The place was stunning, but we ended up filling our time with activities instead of just taking it easy, and I never quite got into a chilled-out holiday mood. So, for me, planning exactly when to go on holiday is crucial to my enjoyment of it.
Speaker 2.
I prefer travelling independently to going on those organised package deals where you travel in a group. You never know who's going to be on the trip with you. Not that that really matters. What does is getting off the tourist trail, feeling like I'm the only person to have visited a place, and I never go back, no matter how perfect it's been. I don't want to risk spoiling happy memories. I've done all kinds of things, cycling tours, beach holidays, luxury cruises, you name it.
Speaker 3.
Nothing spoils a holiday more than opening a hotel window onto a crowded street or hearing music at full volume. That's why I take great care to select somewhere out of the way, even if there's little to do there. Travelling solo means I often end up chatting to people from different backgrounds. Always fascinating. The room itself doesn't matter. I'm happy even in the most basic of hotels. And I always make the best of things, even when there are storms or heat waves. It's having a proper break that's important.
Speaker 4.
My best mates and I usually go on beach holidays. My only condition when we're choosing where to go is that I won't be stuck on a beach all day. Sure, it's lovely lying down in the sun for a while and all that. I get restless, though, and have to keep myself occupied, whether it's doing water sports or day trips to historical villages or whatever. That's what makes or breaks a holiday for me. We can afford better hotels and stuff now we're working, but I'm just as happy in a tent.
Speaker 5.
I don't get many holidays, so when I do, I want to make the most of them. I only go to parts of the world where blue skies and boiling temperatures are guaranteed. I spend most of the time out and about, so I'm not bothered if the accommodation isn't top class, as long as I haven't paid a small fortune for it. I don't mind which season I go in either, though it sometimes means long-distance travel for the kind of holiday I want.
Speaker 6.
I like to spend my cash on a fancy hotel whenever I can, and I've been to a few now. It's not a problem if I can't do that, though. As long as I'm away, it doesn't matter where that bed is after a day doing water sports or whatever. I have travelled alone and taken a load of good books with me, but there's nothing like travelling with someone you've got lots in common with. Then you can chat about the adventures of the day or whatever.
Now you will hear the six speakers again. Speaker 1.
Recently, I spotted a great package deal online and decided to go for it at the last minute with a close friend who happened to be free. This involved rushed, last-minute preparations, and when we arrived on holiday, work was still on my mind. The place was stunning, but we ended up filling our time with activities instead of just taking it easy, and I never quite got into a chilled-out holiday mood. So, for me, planning exactly when to go on holiday is crucial to my enjoyment of it.
Speaker 2.
I prefer travelling independently to going on those organised package deals where you travel in a group. You never know who's going to be on the trip with you. Not that that really matters. What does is getting off the tourist trail, feeling like I'm the only person to have visited a place, and I never go back, no matter how perfect it's been. I don't want to risk spoiling happy memories. I've done all kinds of things, cycling tours, beach holidays, luxury cruises, you name it.
Speaker 3.
Nothing spoils a holiday more than opening a hotel window onto a crowded street or hearing music at full volume. That's why I take great care to select somewhere out of the way, even if there's little to do there. Travelling solo means I often end up chatting to people from different backgrounds. Always fascinating. The room itself doesn't matter. I'm happy even in the most basic of hotels. And I always make the best of things, even when there are storms or heatwaves. It's having a proper break that's important.
Speaker 4.
My best mates and I usually go on beach holidays. My only condition when we're choosing where to go is that I won't be stuck on a beach all day. Sure, it's lovely lying down in the sun for a while and all that. I get restless, though, and have to keep myself occupied, whether it's doing water sports or day trips to historical villages or whatever. That's what makes or breaks a holiday for me. We can afford better hotels and stuff now we're working, but I'm just as happy in a tent.
Speaker 5.
I don't get many holidays, so when I do, I want to make the most of them. I only go to parts of the world where blue skies and boiling temperatures are guaranteed. I spend most of the time out and about, so I'm not bothered if the accommodation isn't top class, as long as I haven't paid a small fortune for it. I don't mind which season I go in either, though it sometimes means long-distance travel for the kind of holiday I want.
Speaker 6.
I like to spend my cash on a fancy hotel whenever I can, and I've been to a few now. It's not a problem if I can't do that, though. as long as I'm away, it doesn't matter where that bed is after a day doing water sports or whatever. I have travelled alone and taken a load of good books with me, but there's nothing like travelling with someone you've got lots in common with. Then you can chat about the adventures of the day or whatever.
That is the end of exercise 3. In a moment, you will hear exercise 4. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 4. You will hear an interview with a skateboarder called Katie Mellows. Listen to the interview and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
This morning, I'm talking to skateboarding champion Katie Mellows. Katie, how did it begin?
Well, I'd seen some guys skateboarding in my street when I was a kid, but never gave it much thought. I was into roller skating, and when they built a skateboard park in town, I thought I'd try it out on my roller boots. That's when I noticed the skateboarders doing all these fancy tricks, and I thought, I want to have a go at that. I was too nervous to ask strangers if anyone had an old board I could use, so I ended up getting my own instead.
You've always taken learning to skateboard seriously, haven't you?
Yes. I'd be the first at the park in the morning and wouldn't leave till it was dark, usually long after the others had left. I'd do the same trick over and over till it was perfect and push myself to do harder and harder stuff. If you're too worried about getting injured, it'll stop you going for it. Yes, I got plenty of bumps and bruises, but I just carried on.
What do you like so much about skateboarding?
It's a hard question to answer, isn't it? Why people like what they like. I suppose it's how you feel when you're doing it. Skateboarding looks really fast and free. There's actually a lot of control needed, though. There's real skill involved, and I think that's what appeals to me about it. You can keep improving. Tricks come and go, but the basic elements stay the same.
How long was it before you started competing?
I'd been skateboarding for about a year when I entered my first junior competition. I definitely wasn't as good as some of the other skaters who'd entered, but I saw that as an opportunity to observe them carefully and learn new techniques. There were skaters of all ages there, which I'd expected. I didn't do especially well, but I was thrilled to have taken part.
How do you prepare for major competitions now?
In the weeks leading up to the competition, I train hard. Then I stop, rest and prepare mentally for a couple of days. This gets me into the zone, ready to compete. I create a picture of the competition in my head, where I sort of watch myself getting that medal. Some skaters lock themselves away and don't speak to other competitors in case they lose confidence. That sort of thing doesn't bother me.
Are other skateboarders envious of your skating ability?
I don't know whether they're jealous, but I get lots of positive comments about how I ride my board compared to other people. Apparently, my skating looks particularly smooth. What I admire about other people is their sense of calm. I always wonder whether my worries about performing well are obvious to others. But I think I'll be able to do all this crazy stuff, so I'm always making new tricks up, with varying success.
And you've just started coaching, haven't you?
I'm currently training to be a skate coach. That might sound strange because skateboarding is known as a street sport. Now it's reached the Olympics, there's a need for experienced skaters to share their knowledge with others, and more people are coming into that side of things. I'm really pleased to be involved in that. I've started trying to assess who'll do okay in competitions and who'll be brilliant. Let's see if I'm right.
Finally, do you have any advice for potential skateboarders who might end up competing?
It's a good idea to sit down and study other skaters. Notice how they do stuff. You can't do anything about them being better than you, other than keep challenging yourself. That said, you need to start slow, really understand the foundations of skateboarding before building up to harder tricks. When it comes to competitions, you need to show not only that you can do those tricks, but that you can do them better than anyone else.
Thanks, Katie.
Now you will hear the interview again.
This morning I'm talking to skateboarding champion Katie Mellows. Katie, how did it begin?
Well, I'd seen some guys skateboarding in my street when I was a kid, but never gave it much thought. I was into roller skating, and when they built a skateboard park in town, I thought I'd try it out on my roller boots. That's when I noticed the skateboarders doing all these fancy tricks, and I thought, I want to have a go at that. I was too nervous to ask strangers if anyone had an old board I could use, so I ended up getting my own instead.
You've always taken learning to skateboard seriously, haven't you?
Yes. I'd be the first at the park in the morning and wouldn't leave till it was dark, usually long after the others had left. I'd do the same trick over and over till it was perfect and push myself to do harder and harder stuff. If you're too worried about getting injured, it'll stop you going for it. Yes, I got plenty of bumps and bruises, but I just carried on.
What do you like so much about skateboarding?
Oh, it's a hard question to answer, isn't it? Why people like what they like. I suppose it's how you feel when you're doing it. Skateboarding looks really fast and free. There's actually a lot of control needed, though. There's real skill involved, and I think that's what appeals to me about it. You can keep improving. Tricks come and go, but the basic elements stay the same.
How long was it before you started competing?
I'd been skateboarding for about a year when I entered my first junior competition. I definitely wasn't as good as some of the other skaters who'd entered, but I saw that as an opportunity to observe them carefully and learn new techniques. There were skaters of all ages there, which I'd expected. I didn't do especially well, but I was thrilled to have taken part.
How do you prepare for major competitions now?
In the weeks leading up to the competition, I train hard. Then I stop, rest and prepare mentally for a couple of days. This gets me into the zone, ready to compete. I create a picture of the competition in my head, where I sort of watch myself getting that medal. Some skaters lock themselves away and don't speak to other competitors in case they lose confidence. That sort of thing doesn't bother me.
Are other skateboarders envious of your skating ability?
I don't know whether they're jealous, but I get lots of positive comments about how I ride my board compared to other people. Apparently, my skating looks particularly smooth. What I admire about other people is their sense of calm. I always wonder whether my worries about performing well are obvious to others. But I think I'll be able to do all this crazy stuff, so I'm always making new tricks up, with varying success.
And you've just started coaching, haven't you?
I'm currently training to be a skate coach. That might sound strange because skateboarding is known as a street sport. Now it's reached the Olympics, there's a need for experienced skaters to share their knowledge with others, and more people are coming into that side of things. I'm really pleased to be involved in that. I've started trying to assess who'll do okay in competitions and who'll be brilliant. Let's see if I'm right.
Finally, do you have any advice for potential skateboarders who might end up competing?
It's a good idea to sit down and study other skaters. Notice how they do stuff. You can't do anything about them being better than you, other than keep challenging yourself. That said, you need to start slow, really understand the foundations of skateboarding before building up to harder tricks. When it comes to competitions, you need to show not only that you can do those tricks, but that you can do them better than anyone else.
Thanks, Katie.
That is the end of the interview and of the exam. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers.